Hebrews chapter 11 again, please. Hebrews chapter 11. And we'll commence reading at verse 11. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly, wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise him even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. Now back into the book of Genesis again, please, and chapter 18, first of all. Genesis chapter 18. And we'll read from verse 9. And they said unto him, Where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, Behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life. And lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old and stricken in years, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And the Lord said unto Abraham, Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I of a surety bear a child which am old? Is there anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And he said, Nay, but thou didst laugh. Now over, please, to chapter 21 and verse 1. Chapter 21. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh, so that all that hear will laugh with me. And she said, Who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given suck? For I have borne him a son in his old age. Now over, please, to chapter 22. Verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham. And he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went unto the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. Trust that God will bless to us his precious word. Now we have a lot of ground to cover this morning, so we won't have time to go over all the ground that we've covered on former occasions. Just to say that from chapter 1, verse 1 to chapter 10, verse 18, we have the presentation of Christ. And in that section, Christ is seen to be superior to everything associated with the Old Covenant, the covenant of the law. He was seen to be superior to the prophets, superior to angels, superior to Moses, superior to Joshua, and on, the superiority of Christ over everything associated with the Old Covenant. Then, from chapter 10, verse 19 to the end of the book, we have the practice of Christianity. Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest, and so on. So we have the practice of Christianity. Now we came to chapter 10 and verse 38, and we saw there a verse quoted from the book of Habakkuk, chapter 2 and verse 4. Now the just shall live by faith. We saw that it is quoted three times in the New Testament. Romans chapter 1, Galatians chapter 3, and Hebrews chapter 10. In Romans and Galatians, the emphasis is, now the just shall live by faith, underlying the word faith. Because in both of those epistles, we see that justification is on the basis of faith and not on the basis of law observance. But when you come to Hebrews chapter 10, the emphasis is upon the word live. Now the just shall live by faith. And so when we come into Hebrews chapter 11, we have an exposition of that text. And we see in Hebrews chapter 11 that faith is not only the principle upon which we were saved, but it becomes the principle whereby we seek to live our lives. So we saw that the first character mentioned was that of Abel. And I suggested to you that the reason Abel is mentioned first is not because he came first in time, but because in Abel we see where faith has its roots, where it begins. You cannot possibly live a life of faith until you've been to the cross first. By faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous. So it's not so much the idea of the worship of faith that's in view in Abel. It's where faith commences. It commences by one recognizing that he has no acceptance before God on the basis of his own good works, but on the basis of an innocent victim being slain and his blood being shed. So you and I look back to a day when we trusted Christ the Savior. Only from that point and onward is it possible for us to live a life of faith. Then we came to the subject of Enoch. And contrary to the popular opinion that in Enoch we see the walk of faith, what is stressed in Hebrews is the climax of faith. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death. So the emphasis in Hebrews is upon his translation, not upon his walk. We saw that Enoch was a man who lived in a day that was marked by atheism and ungodliness. And for the first 65 years of his life, as far as the record goes, he was no different from his contemporaries. But at the birth of Methuselah, he had a 180-degree turn. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years. What made the change? Well, Methuselah means when he shall die, it shall come. And so, as a result of that revelation to him, that after the death of Methuselah, the flood would come, it completely transformed Enoch. He learned four things we saw. Number one, he learned that God is. Number two, he learned that God hates sin. Number three, he learned that God was going to judge sin. Number four, he learned that he himself was going to be translated prior to the coming flood. That's what it says in Hebrews 11. By faith, he was translated. So we can only understand from that that God communicated to him the fact that he himself was going to be translated prior to the coming of the flood. And that totally changed him. One thing he didn't know when he was going to be translated. So every day he sought to live to please God. The word used in Hebrews 11 is, before his translation, he had this testimony that he completely pleased God. So he sought to live for God. Okay, then we came to the subject of Noah. And we saw that Noah's days were very much like the days of Enoch. Even though Enoch was translated, it seemed to have no impression upon the people of his day. So that when Noah came into the world, it was marked by wickedness and violence. And yet we read of Noah. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And we read of him that Noah was upright among his contemporaries, and Noah walked with God. And so prior to the revelation to him of the coming of the flood, Noah already walked with God. That indicates that Noah was already a saved man before he was warned of the coming of the flood. Okay? And I suggested that he was brought up in a home where God was feared. That, I believe, we learn in Lamech. Okay, so Noah, by the building of the ark, it had three results. By faith, Noah, when he was warned of things not seen as yet, prepared an ark to the saving of his house. So he had an influence upon his own house as a result of building the ark. By which also he condemned the world. So in the building of the ark, he condemned the world that was round about him. But it was a witness to his faith in God. Okay? So there we have the subject of Noah. Now we've come to the subject of Abraham. And we saw that Abraham, again, was brought up in idolatry. Even though there had been the flood, etc., Abraham was a man who was brought up in idolatry. We saw that from Joshua chapter 24. They worshipped other gods. And that's why we read in Acts chapter 7, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham. And so Abraham was called to leave behind his country and his kindred and his father's house and go to a land that God would later tell him of. But we saw that his father took the initiative. Terah took Abraham and his wife Sarah and his nephew Lot, and he went to go to the land. But they came to Haran, and there they stopped. Terah could bring them out, but he couldn't bring them in. So there was a delay in the life of Abraham. You know, we read in connection with David. David was old and full of years, yet he only lived to the age of 70. Jacob could say when he was 130, few and evil have the years of my life been. Why the difference? I take it, God doesn't count the number of years that we live. He counts the number of days that we live for him. And so as far as David is concerned, he was old and full of days. And so as you go through Hebrews 11, the various problems are not mentioned, but there were problems in the lives of certain individuals, certainly in the life of Abraham. We never read of him going down into Egypt. But he did go down into Egypt. And there were other delays as well in the life of Abraham. So we saw that in the life of Abraham, he lived the life of a pilgrim when he came into the land. Even though that land was promised to him and to his seed, he recognized that it wasn't his to enjoy presently. It was a future thing. And so he passed through the land as though through a strange country. He lived a pilgrim life. So you and I, we're strangers and pilgrims. Strangers because we're in a foreign land. Pilgrims because we're going home. And we should be living the life of strangers and pilgrims. Okay? We saw that two things marked Abraham. Number one, he built an altar. Number two, he pitched a tent. He didn't build a tent and pitch an altar. He built an altar and pitched a tent. In other words, what was for God was permanent. Hundreds of years after Abraham was gone, that altar would still be there, a witness to the God of Abraham. But he dwelt in a tent, just a temporary residence. He recognized that he was only here for a time. And you and I need to learn that we're only here for a time. We should not be living with this world in view. We should be living in view of the world that is to come, as far as we are concerned. Okay? Now we come to the next section that we read about today. First of all, I want us to notice in verse 12, the fruitfulness of faith. Verse 11. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Now, some have suggested a different translation, and they suggest that it wasn't Sarah's faith here, but Abraham's faith. I don't believe that. I believe it's Sarah's faith. Not all that many women are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. And that's not a put down for sisters, nor is it suggesting for one moment that men are more characterized by faith than women. That would be far from the truth of the matter, okay? It has nothing to do with that. So we read of her, by faith also Sarah received strength to conceive seed. Now, I want us to notice, please, progressive revelation. We're going to have to move quickly. Come with me, please, to Genesis chapter 12. Verse 7. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there buildeth he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. So here we have the first revelation to Abraham of a seed. Unto thy seed. Abraham was 75 years of age at this point. So he's getting up there in years. And God promised him a seed. Okay, now over, please, to chapter 13. Verse 14. And the Lord said unto Abram after the Lot was separated from him, Lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. Now, we're not told how much time had gone by, but there had been a lapse of time, and still there was no seed. Verse 16, And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Okay, so there's the second revelation to him. Now over, please, to chapter 15. Chapter 15, and we'll read from verse 2. And Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is this Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, Behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is mine heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, This shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, Look now toward heaven and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it unto him for righteousness. Here's the third time that God spoke to him. It would seem that it was traditional, if a man hadn't any seed of his own, that his senior servant would become his son and would be heir to the property. And so Abraham presumed now that maybe the seed that was promised was going to be Eliezer, his son. Now God has made it plain in these verses that it was going to be one that would come forth out of his own bowels. Okay? Chapter 16, please. Verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children. And she had an handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said unto Abram, Behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. In other words, it's the Lord's fault. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I shall obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after that Abram dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived, and we know the tragic results of that. And so now Sarah is reasoning, well, if I can't bear children, maybe Abraham's genuine seed is going to be through my handmaid, Hagar. And God makes it plain again that it's not going to be through the handmaid. So first of all, it was going to be his seed. Secondly, it was going to be one that came forth from his own bowels, not a servant. Thirdly, it was not going to be through Hagar. It was going to be through Sarah. Okay. Now, chapter 17, please. Verse 15. And God said unto Abram, As for Sarai thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. And I will bless her, and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall come of her. Then Abram fell on his face and laughed. So Abraham laughed too. And said in his heart, Shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? And Abraham said unto God, Oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. And God said, Sarah, thy wife, shall bear thee a son indeed. And I will establish my covenant with him and with his seed after him. Okay. So what I want us to notice, please, is that between chapter 16 and chapter 17 is a period of 14 years. For 14 years, Abraham never heard the voice of God. Sad, isn't it? Because he hearkened to the voice of his wife and took Hagar to be a second wife. In other words, They were going to use their own initiative instead of believing God. For 14 years, God never spoke to him. I wonder, when the records come out, how much of my life will have been spent not in fellowship with God. Well, that was the problem as far as he was concerned. Now chapter 18, please. We've already read this passage. Maybe I'll skip some of it for the sake of time. Verse 11. Now, Abram and Sarah were old and stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, "After I am old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?" And the Lord said unto Abraham, "Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, 'Shall I of a surety bear a child that am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord?'" Underline that, will you? "At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son." Now, over, please, to chapter 21. I love these words. Chapter 21 and verse 1. "And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God has spoken unto him." So, back in chapter 18, Sarah was characterized by laughing. She laughed because she didn't believe God at that time. But when we come to Hebrews chapter 11, at some point in time subsequent to that, Sarah really believed God. By faith, Sarah conceived seed. So, Sarah believed God. And as a result of believing God, she conceived seed. So, not only was Abraham characterized by faith, but Sarah here was marked by faith as well. So it says here in Hebrews chapter 11, "Through faith Sarah also herself conceived strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age." In other words, she was too old, naturally speaking, to bear a child. Why did she conceive seed? Because she judged him faithful who had promised. And what is the end result? "Therefore sprang there even of one, and him already become dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. Now that expression, "and him already having died," it could have two meanings. It could be a reference to the fact that he was beyond the physical capability of germinating the seed. Could mean that. On the other hand, it could be that now Abraham has died. He never saw the multiplication of his seed in his lifetime, but he did see Isaac born. So the end result was far greater than one would normally think. You know, if you and I believe God, we have no idea just what the repercussions of that faith in God could result in, ultimately. I think, for example, of Andrew. Andrew is a favorite character of mine in the New Testament. We don't read a whole lot about Andrew, but one thing we do read about Andrew. Andrew brought his brother Peter. So that on the day of Pentecost, when Peter preached, and at least 3,000 souls were saved, Andrew became grandfather to 3,000 souls. If Andrew had not initially brought his brother Peter, there wouldn't have been that result one would have expected anyway. But whatever, Andrew was the instigator in bringing Peter to the Lord. And Peter was used of God on just one occasion in the salvation of approximately 3,000 souls. So if you and I are characterized by faith in God, the end results of that, the multiplication of that, could be immense. On the other hand, if you and I get away from God, the tragic results of that can multiply as well. You know, I think, for example, of Elimelech and Naomi going down into Moab. I don't blame Naomi. I blame Elimelech. As a result of them going down into Moab, not only did he die in the land of Moab, but their two sons died in the land of Moab. Died away from God. I remember a certain brother I knew, an old man, and he had been saved when he was younger, but he got away from God. And when he was an old man, he got restored to God. Wonderful. But in the meanwhile, he had lost his family. And that can go on generation after generation after generation because of a tragic choice that was made by an individual. So here we have the faith of Sarah. Okay, we have to move quickly. Then I want us to think in verses 13 to 16 of the persistence of faith. These all died in faith. I take it that's a reference not to just Abraham and Sarah, but you'll notice it says back in verse 9, by faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off and were persuaded of them and embraced them and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims in the earth. In their lifetime, they never saw the fulfillment of God's promise. That is, that the seed would multiply like the sand of the sea and like the stars of the sky. They never saw it in their lifetime. But it says they saw it afar off. And they embraced it. In other words, they made the promises of God their very own. They believed God. They did not die in despair. They died in faith. That is, they died believing that God was yet going to fulfill His promises. Maybe there are some here and you've got children not saved. Maybe even grown-up children. They might not be saved in your lifetime, but they might be saved after you're gone. I think of the Griffins in West Bank, and Jack Griffin died at a fairly young age, and a number of his boys weren't saved at the time. But they've been saved since. The whole family of 16 children, they're all believers in the Lord Jesus. He never saw it in his lifetime. But God fulfilled His promise. And so we need to just cling to God and really believe what God has to say. And what was the end result of it? They confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. So like Abraham, they lived the life of a pilgrim. Verse 14, for they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. Now that word for country, it doesn't actually mean country. Literally, it means a fatherland. And that's the country that you and I are looking for. And truly, had they been mindful of that country from whence they came out, Ur of the Chaldees, they might have had an opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He hath prepared for them a city. Are you and I living like that? Not living for this country, but living for a better country, that is a heavenly? Are we living with eternity's values in view? Or is this life down here too important to us? That's the question we need to ask ourselves. Now, I'm sorry, but I've really run out of time, but I do want us to get on to the next section. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. Stop there. Abraham, when he was tried, if you read Genesis chapter 22, it says there, after these things, the Lord did tempt Abraham. Now, don't read into the word tempt the thought of a temptation to do evil. That's what we normally think of in relation to temptation. There's temptation to do evil in the scriptures, but there's also temptation to do good. The idea of it is God tested him. But I want you to notice the words, after these things. That is, after all the preceding events in his life, from the time that God called him in Ur of the Chaldees up until that point, Abraham had gone through all sorts of tests, and by those tests, God was strengthening his faith. It was after these things that the Lord tried Abraham. God will not suffer us to be tempted above that which we are able to bear. He knows how much we can take. If Abraham had been given this supreme test earlier in his experience, he would have failed miserably. But God prepared him for this point. Then I want you to notice, too, that this wasn't so much a test of his fidelity or his love, whether he loved God more than he loved Isaac. It's a test of faith. So it says here, by faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. Now think about that for a moment. Did he offer up Isaac? No, he didn't. The ram was provided in his place, in Isaac's place. But the point is, God gave him credit for what he intended to do. Sometimes God will prevent us doing certain things that are upon our hearts to do. We want to do it for God. And God will prevent us doing it. Well, God will give us credit for what we intended to do. Remember when David, it was in his heart to build a temple for the Lord. Well, David wasn't able to do that. But it was good that it was in his heart. And God gave him the credit that it was in his heart. And he that received the promises, that word to receive, It's in the middle voice, which means he received it to himself. He that received to himself the promises offered up his only begotten son. What does that mean? It means that not only did God give him this promise in relation to his seed, that his seed would become like the stars of the sky and like the sand by the seashore and so on, but he received that promise to himself. He made it his very own. He depended upon that promise to God. And he that had received to himself the promises offered up his only begotten son. Now, Isaac is the only person in the scriptures other than Christ that is actually described as the only begotten son. Now, that's important for us to see, because Isaac is a picture for us of Christ. We're going to see that as we proceed through it. And so we see Abraham acts consistent with the promise of God. Verse 18, of whom it was said, that in Isaac thy seed shall thy seed be called. Now what is all this saying? It's saying simply this. This is how Abraham reasoned. If all God's promises concerning my seed are in Isaac, and I have to offer Isaac as a sacrifice, as a burnt offering upon the mountain, God is going to have to raise Isaac from the dead. That's how Abraham reasoned. Amazing, isn't it? There had never been a single example of anyone raised from the dead up until this point in time. Yet he believed that God was the God of resurrection and that God would raise him from amongst the dead. Of course, God couldn't accept the sacrifice of Isaac. There's only one human sacrifice that's acceptable to God, and that's the sacrifice of Christ upon the cross. But that's how Abraham reasoned. Notice verse 19. Accounting, reasoning, that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which also he received him in a figure. So that's how Abraham reasoned. If all the promises of God are fulfilled through Isaac, then God is going to have to raise him from amongst the dead. Now, normally in a gospel meeting, we look at the story of the offering up of Isaac in Genesis 22, and we think of Isaac as the sinner and the ram being the substitute for Isaac. But that's not how Hebrews 11 puts it. In Hebrews 11, Isaac is a picture of Christ, the only begotten Son. And just as Abraham had every intention of offering Isaac upon the altar, so in the picture, Isaac was offered up. Remember, Abraham had said to the servants, "Abide ye here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go hither and worship and come again to you." I believe Abraham believed with all his heart that that is exactly what would happen. He wasn't duping his servants into thinking that Isaac was going to come back. He believed with all his heart that Isaac was going to come back. And as far as the picture is concerned, Isaac did come back. So, in the picture, Isaac is a picture of Christ and his death upon the cross. And so we see he came back. Okay. What was it that enabled Abraham to make this final declaration of his faith? Why was he able to do what he did? Well, first of all, it says in verse 17, "He that received to himself the promises." He made the promises of God his very own. Now, that's what you and I as believers have to do. We have to really believe God. Tell me, are you prepared to do anything? Go anywhere? At any cost to yourself? As long as it's the will of God? Are you prepared to go to the remotest parts of the world to serve God? Are you prepared to serve God in situations that are extremely dangerous? That was the kind of faith that Abraham had. And that's the kind of faith that should characterize every one of us as believers. He received to himself the promises. Secondly, he accounted that God was able to raise him even from amongst the dead. As we read earlier, is anything too hard for the Lord? When we were young, we used to sometimes go to what they used to call the Cardiff Christian Rally on a Saturday night. It was for younger believers. And we used to sing a lot of hymns and choruses. And one of the ones we used to sing is this: God can do anything. 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 God can do anything but fail. God cannot fail. And you and I need to learn to believe God. That's the kind of faith that should characterize every believer in the Lord Jesus. That's what he's looking for in your life and mine. And if we have that kind of faith, we're going to obey God. When God tells us that we should do certain things, we will do it because our confidence is in God. Trust the Lord will bless his word to each one.